I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Mike Monahan. Mike is a best-selling author, a speaker, a coach, and for many years was the executive director of Life Success Seminars. And as we're beginning the new year here, a lot of people make New Year's resolutions and quickly forget what those resolutions are. But people who really want to change their lives, what steps should they take besides just making a resolution that they're going to ignore?
If you came over to my house, I have two whiteboards in my basement, 4x8-foot whiteboards. One's a zero debt board, and the other one's a 2014 goals board. Each year, I put up my goals for the year, and then I make sure I tell as many people as I can what I'm doing, because it's really simple. If I don't tell anyone, that board sits in the basement. If I tell two people, I can avoid them. If I tell the whole world, I either got to get out of Cincinnati or I got to do what I say I'm going to do. So it's about accountability. That's a great start, and just writing it down without editing it. Oftentimes we don't want to dream the big dream because we get locked in the house of it.
How do you then take it to the next step and put some action steps besides those goals?
Well, I think you can get accountability partners. I built a career on coaching people. I have a really simple model. I'll ask you the tough questions you don't want me to ask you. And I ask that you do three things a week. And my philosophy is if you do 150 things a year, there's got to be three winners in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so just the idea of taking action, I've been successful, I don't think because I've done anything flashy. I just get up every day and there's things I know I have to do if I'm going to have what I say I want. And I got good people around me that encourage me. I'm not big on somebody else holding me accountable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm big about encouragement. If I'm 100% committed to my dreams, then that's my responsibility to get there.
And I guess as a coach, what you're really doing is taking what people want to do and helping them with the steps they need to take in order to get to where it is they want to go?
Actually, not, because in the beginning, I do that. I shouldn't say I don't do that. But in the beginning, what I find are oftentimes the goals they have are things they're trying to prove. Through the process I use, oftentimes when I drill down, what they find out is like, wow. In the end, even if I got it, I don't think it's going to make me happy. So then we talk about what is it you really want to do? So when you get to the end of what you're doing and along the way, because if you aren't enjoying it along the way, well, why are you doing it? It's crazy.
You know, Mike, I'm reading your book now, and one of the things that I thought was really interesting was when you talk about the fact that so many people focus on what they don't want instead of what they do want.
If people have one fear, it's taking responsibility for the quality of your own life. I mean, all you have to do is watch TV. Everybody's blaming everybody about everything else. So it's much easier to blame the rest of the world on why you can't have what you want. So that leads people to looking for excuses. And when you're looking for excuses, you got to talk about what isn't working. I was just with somebody for a two-hour lunch today and talking about, and she said, I'm afraid to even write my dreams down. So if you're afraid to write your dreams down, what's the odds that you're going to communicate it? If you don't communicate it to the world, I mean, it'd be like owning the best hamburger in Cincinnati and somebody says, what do you sell? I can't tell you. I mean, that's crazy. But we do that with our dreams. We don't communicate them because we don't think we're worthy of having them. I've built a whole career on making things simple. I've failed almost every year in school. And what I find is really smart people use thinking as a way to avoid action.
If you would like to go online, take a look at Mike's website. It is
MikeMonahan.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mike Monahan. Mike is a best-selling author, a speaker, a coach, and for many years was the executive director of Life Success. And you've done a lot of coaching of people over the years, and still do. What do you think causes people not to achieve their goals?
I think being afraid of, are they capable? Do they want to be accountable? What's the expectation if I do it? Oftentimes people see my greatness more than I do, and that kind of scares me. It's like, I don't know that I'm equipped to show up the way you see me, because I have a view of me and other people have a view of me. It really can get confusing at times.
What advice would you have someone as they listen to us here today?
If you're going to be successful, you're going to fail a lot. And most people want a guarantee, so they don't take action. So they sit back and think about it and calculate and keep doing all this and never go anywhere. Well, to me, I'm not embarrassed about failing. It's like, you know what? every failure, I'm going to improve the next step I have. And so,
and don't haven't some of the most successful people, I mean, some of the most successful people in our history, failed multiple times until they actually achieved the highest level of success?
Yeah, some of the richest people have gone bankrupt 2 and 3 times. Yes, they don't get lost in that. The truth is, I do what I do because I love it. I can't get lost in the results of it. I just got to keep engaging every day and looking at where I want to change. So I love what I'm doing, not what other people think.
Well, and you use that word love because I would bet that many people in today's world who have jobs don't love what they do. Mm-hmm. So that passion that you must have for what you do, the passion that others have that are successful, that is a critical component, isn't it?
Yes. And when we're trying to prove things, that gets distorted. I feel like the only thing I try to do when I'm coaching people is I say, I just want to get in your head. I want you to think different. I have no idea what you ought to do with that. You have to figure that out. My job is to be the catalyst that gets you thinking different so you can get better results. And so I'm not lost in my clients' results. And they don't get to hold me accountable. They're responsible for their own results. And so it's really a clear engagement on my part that I deliver this, you deliver back. And I'm not going to take responsibility for you. And I know what I'm doing. You got to decide, are you willing to do your part? And I'm good to go whether you do or don't. That's up to you. It's your life.
Well, what final comment would you like to leave folks listening today?
I would say if you want a great life, take the time to really look into your past, not get lost in it, as to what really is driving your behavior, and get honest with it. Don't stand in judgment. Just recognize that there's certain things that you're doing over and over again that can sabotage your results. But if you change them, like mine is the need to feel smart. So I have to find where I can find value with that.
And if folks would like to learn more about you, Mike Monahan, or find where they can pick up your book, the book is called Your Future is Stuck in Your Past. Your website is?
MikeMonahan.com.
And they can find the book on Amazon?
Yes, yes.
Thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Todd Henry. Todd is the founder of a company called The Accidental Creative. He's also an author of a book called Die Empty and The Accidental Creative, which is a book, the second book that you've written, Todd. And some of the topics that you talk about are things that we hear from our clients and other business professionals all the time, but they have this fear of whether it be failure, whether it be people telling them no. You have a whole line of thinking about fear and how to approach that.
I do. Well, fear is going to be present anytime there's uncertainty. You know, most of us experience fear in the face of uncertainty. And I have a friend, Thad Cockrell, a musician, who says, our job every day as creatives is to walk into dark rooms and turn the light on. That's our only job, is to just walk into a dark room and turn the light on. But most of us want to stay where the light already is. And the reason we do this is because we're biologically hardwired to prevent uncertainty in our life. Because, you know, in past ages, uncertainty meant we were going to get eaten by something larger or whatever, right? And so I think sometimes we feel that same sense of terror and fear when we're doing any kind of work that involves uncertainty. There's a guy named Neil Fiore who does research into procrastination, and he asks, why do people procrastinate? What are some of the common forces? And he'll often do this experiment with his clients where he'll take them into a room and he'll put a 10-foot wood plank on the floor, you know, 6 inches wide, 10 feet long, and he'll ask them, could you walk the length of that plank? And they look at him like it's a trick question. What do you mean? Of course I could walk the length of the plank. It's just a wood plank on the floor. And I'll say, well, now imagine I take that plank and I suspend it 100 feet in the air between two buildings. Now could you walk the length of that plank? And they look at him like he's crazy. What do you mean? No way. It's 100 foot in the air wood plank. No way am I going to walk across it. Well, what is changed about the technical skill required to walk the plank? Absolutely nothing. If you could do it on the ground, you could do it in the air. What's changed are the perceived consequences of failure, which in this case is plummeting to your death. But I would submit to you that many of us go through our days artificially escalating planks, artificially escalating the perceived consequences of failure. And as a result, we never act. Even in small ways, we never act on our ideas, on our instincts, because we have so escalated these perceived consequences of failure that it paralyzes us.
Do you agree with that? Fear is something that you can actually, the more you do a particular task, it becomes less fearful?
That's exactly right. Fear turns something innocuous into something terrifying. And so the more we talk about fear, and especially within organizations, the more we talk about the actual consequences of failure, which are often very different from our perceived consequences of failure, and we talk about worst case scenarios, we talk about the actual risks involved in a specific course of action, the more fear tends to dissipate. But the more we just let it stew in the darkness, the worse it gets and the more paralyzing it can become. And so I always tell people, listen, your job is to take small risks every day to push yourself in the direction of your fear. Notice your fear and move directly toward it, because as we do that, the fear tends to dissipate and we begin to understand true consequences versus the ones that we just conjure up in our imagination.
So when you advise people, when you coach people or help businesses accomplish these types of tasks and really take themselves to the next level, how do you do that very practically? Do you actually set up opportunities for them to face fear and let them practice?
For the most part, these little daily risks that we take are taken in a lot of cases they're taken individually by people who are choosing a specific course of action that may not comply with the direction the company has traditionally gone, or it may challenge an existing assumption within the marketplace. It may be, you know, a new product, a new idea, a new message that they're wanting to pursue. And so the real difficulty here is that we often don't know what those what is risky to one person may be easy to another person. What's easy to someone may be infinitely risky to someone else.
If people are interested in reaching out to you, learning more about you and your work and your books, where can they find that information?
You can find me at toddhenry.com. You can find my books anywhere books are sold.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Todd Henry. Todd is the founder of Accidental Creative, which is a company that helps teams be prolific, brilliant, and healthy. You're also the author, Todd, of two books, Die Empty and The Accidental Creative. You're an international speaker. How would you describe the book, and why should somebody pick it up? What could they learn from it?
The most important thing I want people to recognize is that every single day and in every single decision that you make, you are building a body of work today. You're contributing to the sum total of value that you will contribute on this earth, which is the very definition of work. We tend to think work is our job. It's not just our job. Our work is any place we add value in our life. And we have four levers that we pull in order to do that. And there are four finite resources. Focus, which is how we define the work that we do. We have a finite amount of attention. All of us know that, right? A finite amount of attention we can spend. Our assets, our financial resources, our relational resources. So focus, assets, time. We each have 168 hours a week at our disposal. And energy. So focus, assets, time, energy is how you bring yourself to your work. It does you no good to dedicate time to something if you don't have the energy to actually do it well, to bring yourself to it. It's a finite resource that you have. So I always tell people, your fate determines your fate. Your focus, your assets, your time, your energy will ultimately determine that body of work that you build. And so if we do nothing else every day but sit down and ask, where is my focus going today? Where are my assets going today? Where am I going to put my time and where am I going to put my energy? That will help you stay aligned and make sure you're building your body of work around something that you care about. Because at the end of your life, you're going to point to that sum total of value you've created. And you're going to ask yourself, does that represent me or did I live somebody else's life?
Because the book title, Die Empty, is all about that, isn't it? Doing all of your best work while you're alive.
That's exactly right. And, you know, unfortunately, that's a thought that a lot of people don't have until very close to the end. But unfortunately, a lot of people look back on their life and they say, I regret that I didn't follow my intuition. I regret that I didn't take more small risks. I regret that I let fear paralyze me, that I took the comfortable path. I regret that ego got in the way and caused me to become inflexible.
We started this country as a lot of entrepreneurs. And then it just seems like as a society, we've become a society that have abandoned some of those traits. Why do you think that is?
First of all, I think that we're seeing a resurgence of entrepreneurship. I think technology is helping us experience a resurgence of entrepreneurship, which is, I think, a wonderful thing. But I mean, frankly, I think it's the easier path to settle. It's the easier path to compromise. And I think that for a large number of people, it's easier to settle and to jump into something that's known than to deal with the uncertainty and what's on the other side of uncertainty. And the reason people don't take strategic risk often and launch a business or pursue an intuition is because they want to know what's on the other side of that uncertainty, which is a luxury that we never have as creatives, as entrepreneurs, as business builders. We never know for sure that there's going to be a return on our effort. And so we'd rather go for the sure thing than risk spending our finite resources and not getting a return. But that is exactly what we have to do if we want to contribute the kind of value we're capable of.
And your books, Die Empty and The Accidental Creative, can help guide people, bring these kinds of thoughts into their mind, help people overcome some of those fears and uncertainty so that they can actually take their selves and their companies to the next level. Todd, thank you so much for being my guest and for that great advice. And again, if folks would like to find you, your website is
toddhenry.com.
And your books can be found anywhere books are sold.
Anywhere books are sold.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Rob Hudson. Rob is a member of the law firm of Frost Brown Todd. Rob, you help your clients with labor and employment law, but today I want to talk about something that's really fun. I think it's wonderful that you and your 13-year-old daughter wrote a book called Our Best Tomorrow, Students Teaching Capitalism to America. How did you come about writing this book, Rob, with your daughter?
Well, I had written the book about a year ago called A Better Tomorrow, and I was paying attention to who was buying the book and realizing, you know, I'm just kind of preaching to the choir about capitalism, and I don't know if this book's going to have a real impact. And what I try to do with the first book was spread a positive message about business owners and business and opportunity and freedom.
And it became the number one hot release on Amazon, so you must have done some things right.
It did fine, and I was happy to do it. It was a lot of fun because I got to meet so many people and travel a bit and give presentations. But it was more important to me to spread a message that would maybe have an impact. So this vehicle, this new book, hopefully it'll reach students, which is what it's all about.
And what are you teaching the students in really both books? What are you teaching about capitalism? You're teaching that it's not evil, right?
Well, sure. And now the second book in particular, the new book, we're teaching capitalism in what I like to describe it as kind of an inverted way. And I've had lengthy discussions with people who say capitalism is just about money. We barely mention money in the book because capitalism is about freedom and opportunity. Why do we try to get a good education? Why do we have hope that our family can do better financially? Why should we respect business owners? All of that relates to capitalism.
And you do it in a story format. You actually partly write in a fiction format, correct? Or Lauren did, at least.
Yes, Lauren did. And I wish she could be here with us
Me
today.
Me too. And I know she was off at another gig, right?
Yeah, she's the star. And we could never reach kids if I had written this book by myself, trust me. And really, I just tried to put two and two together. How can we reach kids? I've got a great fiction writer in the family, and she has this amazing descriptive ability. We were able to then put this book together in relatively short order over the summer, and it just worked.
So the book's not political at all. It's really just teaching kids probably something most parents don't even know how to communicate to them.
Yeah, the book never mentions conservative or liberal or Republican or Democrat. But, Crystal, it does talk a bit about concepts of freedom and limited government. And the main character in the book, Isabella, does become president.
Oh, she does?
Yes, she does.
And does she come from an economically challenged background?
Well, she does. And the key for Isabella is her education and hard work. And that anybody can succeed with education and hard work.
Does seem like I've learned that once or twice in history, right? I mean, I do think this country was founded on some of those very same principles. Or did I misunderstand that?
Well, sure it is. And that's what we stress in the book. That's why we hope that it's bipartisan. We hope that it's apolitical. We talk a little bit about regulation in the book, too. And just real quick, one of the little stories I think Lauren likes to tell is that, hey, I play soccer. If they change the rules of the game of soccer every week and they tell us that we can't run anymore, we can only jog, and then they tell us we can only walk, no one would want to play soccer. So that's the kind of teaching that we have relative to regulation. Hey, you can't keep slowing us down and changing the rules on us. If you do, it's going to slow down opportunity and progress.
So again, the book is called Our Best Tomorrow, Students Teaching Capitalism to America. The book can be found on Amazon?
It can. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it's easy to pick up and get. It's in Joseph Beth and other places as well.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Rob Hudson. Rob is a member of the law firm of Frost Brown Todd. He's also assists clients in the areas of labor and employment law. But Rob, you're here today to talk with us again about your new book, that's called Our Best Tomorrow, Students Teaching Capitalism to America. And it's not really just your book. You also wrote this with your 13-year-old daughter. How is it like writing a book with your daughter?
It was remarkably easy. And in fact, she wrote most of the book. All I did was I gave her a little bit of an outline that explaining, Lauren, we really want to teach kids about business. We want to teach them about opportunities in education. Here's a real rough outline, a couple of paragraphs. You just go to town, have fun, and then we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, and we'll talk about progress, and we'll try to see how my parts can mesh with your parts. And it was remarkably easy. My parts were the ones that needed work. Her parts went pretty smoothly.
Did you, for example, give her a concept? And then the idea was she took that concept and put it in language, in words, that students could understand?
Yes, and that I couldn't possibly do. But really, when you think about it, capitalism and free enterprise is all about our ordinary day-to-day lives. Whether we're employed in capitalism or whether we partly own a business, it's what it is that we do. And so the stories were pretty, I think, now I couldn't tell them in the way she did, but they were ordinary, everyday success stories. Our neighbors who are successful, people we know who are successful. So in that regard, it's not such a challenging subject. And that's why we think we're really onto something in helping teach kids about capitalism.
Were you surprised with all the national attention the book's getting?
Because gotten national attention.
Right.
I was, in fact, when you think about it, it's a summer project, father-daughter. First, we didn't know if anybody would publish it. And within a week after we shopped the manuscript, it was published. And then within a week after the book was on the market, we were on Fox News in New York City, father-daughter at Christmas time. It was fabulous. It was fun. But it was also a little bit stressful because I have a little local media experience. But being in the bright lights like that, even for me, you should see the look on our faces at the beginning of the Stossel show. It's really sheer terror.
Is the idea that parents and children together read this, or what is your goal in terms of who will be the audience for this book?
The goal, to cut to the chase, is to get it into the schools. Parents should read it, and their kids should read it, and they should talk about it. And we've already had some early successes getting the book into schools. It's a tough subject to get into the public school system, but, you know, we're going to keep plugging away. The book's only been out for 3-4 weeks, and maybe with the attention it's getting, it has a chance to make an impact.
Do you have plans for the next book?
We do.
You already got one started.
And the publisher's after us.
That's
hot
fabulous.
And heavy to get the third one going. We have a schedule to meet. You know, we'll have to see. Lauren would love to just write pure fiction, I'm sure. I'm sure that would be her preference. But if we can, again, have an impact with kids, why not do another one?
And it would be the two of you again?
It definitely would be. The next book would relate to more about morals and standards in everyday life in America, how to be successful.
And again, not to leave an important person in your family out, your dad was the illustrator in this too, correct?
Yeah, dad's a great artist. And this was all, you might call me the manager of this project. I realized I had a little talent in the family, including my dad, who's a great artist. Right. And he pitched in and helped. So hopefully it'll just keep on rolling. It debuted on Amazon, number one in its category.
That's
free
wonderful.
Enterprise, and number one in current affairs on Amazon.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Scott Wells. Scott is the project manager for Advantage Kentucky Alliance. Scott, you're also a Northern Kentucky University graduate. You're actually located here on the campus of Northern Kentucky University in your role with the Kentucky Alliance. Prior to that, though, you were very involved with Eureka Ranch, Doug Hall, this whole idea of innovation, and you've brought a lot of those ideas to your current role with the Kentucky Advantage Kentucky Alliance. Can you share this whole concept of innovation?
Innovation engineering is a systematic approach, much like Lean and Six Sigma. It follows the same philosophy. It's just applied to new product and new process development.
How has manufacturing changed? Now, I think a lot of folks think of manufacturing the way it was maybe as recent as 20 years ago, pretty much hands-on, manual. That's not the case anymore, is it?
No, it's not. Manufacturing has advanced quite a bit. It was best summed up in a recent economic development meeting where they were interviewing students who were involved in manufacturing classes. They said that they got to tour Mazak and Bia and companies like this, and they said everything my dad said about not going into manufacturing to stay in school. They said, but this is where all the cool things are happening.
Very much computerized. There's a lot of IT involved these days. And there are so many jobs that would be available to people if there were enough workers who wanted those jobs. And we just as a society have kind of put the kibosh on manufacturing. I think we grew up with a thinking that you have to go to college to get a college education, so you didn't work in a manufacturing facility. But there's a lot of good-paying jobs out there.
These are high-paying jobs that are going unfulfilled. In Northern Kentucky especially has been hard hit. And it's really a perception issue. It's not what it's perceived to be, sweaty, dirty, and blue-collar. These are advanced jobs with high-paying salaries that are involved. They're looking for people who can fill these positions. The Advantage Kentucky Alliance helps in workforce development issues as well.
Well, I was just going to talk to you about that for a bit. How is the Advantage Kentucky Alliance collaborating with universities and maybe other types of schools, educational facilities to provide these workers and train them?
Well, part of our alliance, as in the name, is six major universities in the state of Kentucky: NKU, EKU, WKU, Moorhead, Murray State, and U of L. And we connect them with businesses where students and faculty can do real-world projects. So these students in engineering and engineering technology are graduating with the resume being, we've helped on this project and worked on this project, as opposed to just theoretical stuff.
And folks listening today would like to learn more about how they might participate in the Alliance, maybe take advantage of some of your services, talk to you about potential workforce. What is your contact information?
Sure. You can always look at our website, which is www.advantagekentucky.org, or reach me at 513-356-9828 here on the campus of Northern Kentucky University.
Yes. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Scott Wells. Scott is the project manager with Advantage Kentucky Alliance, and your organization is a public-private partnership, or
yes,
maybe you
yes.
can explain a little more about what Advantage Kentucky Alliance is.
Sure. We're a partially funded, not-for-profit organization, part of the U.S. Department of Commerce, the division of the Manufacturing Extension Partnership.
And you'll go in and you'll help manufacturers how to be more efficient, maybe uncover innovative ways to do what they're doing better, faster. And these types of processes and opportunities aren't just with big companies, are they? You can help smaller companies as well.
Absolutely, from the one to two person mom and pop up to the multi-thousand employee manufacturer.
So someone listening today, maybe someone who works for a company or owns a manufacturing company, they're wondering how they would go about getting started and how expensive it is. Are there dollars available, governmental dollars or grants or loans or anything that help pay for this type of thing?
Yes, absolutely. One of the wonderful things about the state of Kentucky is there is a grant for training, which most of AKA's services fall under, the Bluegrass State Skills, which we can help connect companies with that. And that usually pays up to 50% of any training dollars, which are very low to begin with.
So if you're a manufacturer listening and you have needs, you don't have enough workers to fulfill the needs of your company, you can apply for these training dollars to go out and help find individuals, and then help those dollars would effectively train them?
Well, it's not training for the job per se, but if it's Lean, is Six Sigma, Innovation Engineering, or any of our other services that they want to bring internally, it applies to that. Anything for growth services or continuous improvement to train the workers. And we also do provide services for workforce development.
So what other exciting types of projects is Advantage Kentucky Alliance kicking off here in Northern Kentucky?
Well, in Northern Kentucky, there is a lot going on. This has been extremely well received here. One, for instance, is a partnership with Duke Energy and the folks at Biologic, which is the life science accelerator in Covington, Kentucky. We're getting ready to kick off working with five of their companies and working with them on a very intense version of innovation engineering, known as our Micro Manufacturing Growth Consortium, to advance and accelerate these startup companies.
Startups, as we all, many of us know, take a long time from idea to commercialization. So is the thought then that working with your organization will be able to help these companies, so the idea is to get that to people faster?
Correct. The data shows with innovation engineering a six-fold faster speed to market from going from idea to commercialization.
Again, if folks listening would like to learn more about what you're up to at the Advantage Kentucky Alliance, how they can benefit, maybe some workforce development training grant program opportunities. What's your contact information?
Sure. You can always check out our website at www.advantagekentucky.org or reach me at 513-356-9828 here on the campus of Northern Kentucky University.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Amy Katz. Amy is the president of Daughters in Charge, which is a division of Baker & DeBall. Amy, Baker & DeBall is an executive coaching firm. You personally have gotten very involved with coaching women. So let's talk about Daughters in Charge. And how did you come up with the idea, and what is that all about?
I came up with the idea after a long interest in developing women as leaders. But I was asked to participate on a panel with the Gehring Center for Family and Private Businesses. And they asked me to talk about leadership along with three women who were in their families' businesses and in leadership roles. And after that, they suggested they might want to form a group, a roundtable for younger women who were not yet at the helm, but who were committed to working in their families' businesses, interested in learning from each other. So I was asked to be a moderator, and I spent the year and continue to work with them. And along the way, I realized that their particular career journey is quite unique. It's very different to have your mother or your father be your boss. It's very challenging when you have things you want to say that you know would improve the business, but you're a little hesitant because you don't know what the reaction will be from one of your parents.
Well, family businesses can be very challenging, I think, and the more family members that are involved, usually the more challenging. But is it even more challenging if you're a female versus a male?
Well, in part, it depends on the business, but I would say they do have unique challenges. So, for example, many women join manufacturing businesses. There are many male-dominated industries, and so to have a young woman join that business and be a manager or a leader is a bit disruptive to the employees. It defies their expectations, and it takes a while for the young women also to be comfortable managing their authority.
But I would have to believe they bring a completely different dynamic, a different leadership style. What are you finding, Amy, as you deal with these folks? Are you seeing that these younger women who are leading differently than their fathers, how's the impact been on the business?
Well, one of the interesting things that I've learned as I've gotten to know these women is that historically, women in family-owned businesses have been referred to as CEOs, as chief emotional officers. And while that's well and good that often women pay attention to relationships in a different way and try and cultivate a culture that is more family-oriented, more supportive, and really focused on relationships, the women I'm working with now take the business side of their work quite seriously. So they really are learning about finances, learning about how to market, and really thinking very carefully about how to position their businesses for the future. So their leadership styles vary, just as leadership styles among men vary. But I do think there's been a shift now from looking only at the relationships to really looking at the whole business and how it's succeeding in the marketplace.
So what do you hope to accomplish with Daughters in Charge?
What we want to do, and with Daughters in Charge, is to really have an impact on daughters globally. We really want to create opportunities for them to learn from each other. We want to provide training in a number of areas: career development, finances, relationships, and leadership itself.
So if someone listening would like to learn more about the Daughters in Charge program, what's your contact information?
We have a website, www.daughtersincharge.com.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Amy Katz. Amy is the president of Daughters in Charge, which is a division of Baker & DeBall, an executive coaching firm. Daughters in Charge has a little different twist than the typical coaching business. Maybe you can tell us what led you to start this business.
Well, apart from my interest in daughters and family businesses, I was interested in creating a business which was online, which would be able to reach young women the way that they live. And they live through their phones now. They live through their laptops. They listen in to gain information while they're working out. So these are the ways that many experts now are using online businesses in order to reach a wider public. The way our business works is actually quite different than a face-to-face coaching engagement with someone. There's blogs, there's going to be podcasts. We are creating an online community and want to have ongoing conversations with the people who decide to join us. And our hope is that they'll get support from each other, that they'll learn from experts that we might bring on to teach them and talk with them. They may sign up for a course on a specific topic. The reality is we'll be able to have a greater impact because we hope to involve and invite women all over the world.
The demographic, as you mentioned, are women between what?
Right now, between 25 and 40.
And they're going to be future leaders of their organization?
The hope for some is that they will be, but the other thing they might be aiming for is a very satisfying professional life. And they're finding it within their family's business, and they're taking on some kind of role of responsibility.
What type of advice do you have for parents of those young people so that they can help advise them in their career path?
Well, I think one thing is to encourage them to have a career. So it really starts there. And the more you can talk about your business and expose your daughter to what you do without pushing it down her throat and be open to giving her choices, I think is most important. Many parents in family businesses are quite clear with their children, sons and daughters, that it's important to work somewhere else first. And if that's not possible or not feasible, or the daughter is absolutely committed and ready to go, then finding ways that the daughter can work for someone else, not for a parent, can perhaps get feedback from outsiders who can really give her excellent advice and suggestions. So it's not only coming from the parent, but it's coming from other employees or other ways to develop and help her form her career.
How do you help young women who don't want to walk in their parents' shadow? How do you advise them?
Well, in some ways, it would be to advise them to really become the kind of professionals that they have always wanted to be. They may look like their parents and act like their parents, but obviously each one is going to have her own unique style. In some ways, though, for a daughter joining a family business, it's often important for her to develop what I like to call executive presence, so that she's not daddy's girl or mommy's girl or whatever, but she really knows how to carry herself, knows how to talk about the business, and also is comfortable in informing her own judgments and opinions and able to assert them.
So if people want to learn more about Daughters in Charge, maybe see if this is something they'd be interested in, what is your contact information?
We have a website, www.daughtersincharge.com.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.